I deliberately didn't say much about the session. I probably could have made some announcements and talked more specifically about what I hope to do. And for those of you who were here in the fall, remember that I did a session in October where I talked about interpersonal conflict. And I had people take somewhat of a test, which is a conflict assessment guide. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that tonight. And my apologies to those people that were here in the fall. I'm going to do some review, but hopefully cover some new material at the same time. But I was hoping to treat this as a forum also. And I'd really encourage people, if you feel like throwing something out, I'd really welcome that. And also, if you disagree, please do. I mean, if we can't take risks in a session on conflict, then I think we're really in trouble. So,
what are your credentials?
Well, I'm going to get into that, actually, here at the beginning. I'm certainly not an expert in this, and I feel like I'm taking a risk in that I've had some unproductive interpersonal conflicts with some people that are in this group here during the year, so they're probably saying, what is this guy going to teach us about conflict, you know? It's something that's a real personal interest of mine, and recently, I've been spending a fair amount of time reflecting back on the winter and taking a look at my own conflict behavior, not only within this community, but also within my family and in significant relationships. And you can extend that even further to take a look at interpersonal conflicts within yourself, intrapersonal conflicts. Lately, I've been examining my examining my own conflict style, and I've really been wanting to learn new ways of dealing with conflict. And I'm going to go on to define conflict and to talk about just kind of explain it a little bit more. My background and my real interest in the subject started in college. My undergraduate degree is from the University of Idaho, and I have a degree in speech communication, which certainly involves more than just public presentation, which a lot of people think it does. I took a course in listening skills, a course in interpersonal communication. One of my favorite classes was in nonverbal communication, and then a 3-credit class in conflict resolution. You're laughing about that nonverbal class?
Yeah,
I'd like to do some stuff on that.
Yeah, but what do you do in the class?
The lab was fun. I always say that. That'd be some fun stuff, just talking about personal space and body talk and things. So I guess I'd like to just maybe welcome you to the session and once again say that I'm certainly not an expert in this, but it's a real strong personal interest of mine. And I really like observing human behavior and in the hopes of maybe better understanding myself and my own interactions with other people. And so what I hope to do, and like I say, I want to kind of treat this as a forum or kind of combination forum session, maybe give you some introduction to conflict, and then hopefully do some role playing if people are willing, and talk about, I guess I'm really interested in hearing about how other people deal with conflict. So in a way, I'm going to be as much a student in this. So what I hope to do is first of all define what I mean by interpersonal conflict, talk about some cultural attitudes or perspectives we have towards conflict, and then look at some different styles of conflict behavior, and then hopefully do some role playing. I've written out some role plays, but we're certainly able to change those. And lastly, I'd like to look at developing some specific strategies and tactics for dealing with interpersonal conflict. When I talk about interpersonal conflict, I'm defining conflict as a struggle between two people, okay, or two independent parties, not necessarily individuals, and the main reason there's a struggle there is because there are perceived incompatible goals or perceived scarce rewards. In other words, the pie isn't big enough for everybody to get a piece, and I want to make sure I get one. And I think the important word there is perceived. Oftentimes, interpersonal conflicts are certainly not real conflicts, but more imagined conflicts. So that's what I'm starting from when I use the definition of interpersonal conflict. And I think a lot of it involves, I remember Jackie's Matins the other morning where she talked about keeping score, where she read the article written by Dan Erlander. And it also involves a real win-lose mentality, that one person will win this disagreement or conflict and one person will lose, and hopefully we can work out of that. And so I guess one of my real interests in conflict is that I don't know who has been a positive role model in my life for learning how to deal with conflict. I would say in one way my mother maybe has, because my mother really was never real good at hiding her feelings, and so she liked to just, she's an Italian, full-blooded Italian, and loves to just rage around the kitchen sometimes. And I really appreciate that. I grew up with that, and so I was able to see conflict and that style of conflict in some ways. But culturally, I think we have some problems with how we deal with conflict. It's viewed as almost negative. And if I would imagine if I were to ask you what comes to mind when you think of conflict and have you throw out some words, most of those would be negative. Something that you want to avoid. And I think all of that reflects, and forgive me if I'm wrong, but all of that reflects in some ways that we have problems with doing conflict. when I was going to do this session tonight, a couple members of the community said, "You just don't give up, do you? You know, you're just out to cause trouble." And kind of this sense that, this is something negative, it's something taboo, and it's something that maybe we shouldn't talk about. It's seen as destructive. And has no redeeming qualities. That for the most part, our conflicts, our interpersonal conflicts, are destructive. They leave us further removed or disengaged from those people that we want to resolve the conflict with. Some common cliches we hear about conflict, and I've heard them many times in this community, don't rock the boat, being labeled as a troublemaker for bringing up issues that are perceived as in conflict with the community. Don't argue in front of the children, and kind of going back and looking at my own family in that situation, other than the example of my mom, I do remember a lot of hidden conflict that once again, there wasn't that productive role model there. And then I think there's certainly a whole religious orientation or perspective that gets developed on conflict, and that is if you don't have anything nice to say to someone, don't say it at all. Turn the other cheek. Some of those, I think, are real strong Christian perspectives, or at least they were in my upbringing, that you just don't disrupt things, okay? And these, one of the things that seems to come out of these cultural perspectives is that the status quo is to be protected, okay? Change is seen as disruptive in any form. And I would take a risk to say that I feel that even in the Holden community, as progressive and as creative as we can be at times, there seems to me to be a real strong tradition here that I think sometimes eliminates looking at a range of possibilities. So change can be seen as disruptive. Conflict is maybe an attempt to bring about change. One of the things that comes out of that perspective, I think, is that it limits possibilities. It's kind of a narrow-minded look at life, and in particular, maybe life in community here, when we limit people from really, you know, freeing up to express a difference of opinion. And some of this started for me this winter when I, at the end of an advocacy session, I turned to a guest and I said, well, what did you think of the session? And he said, who are you people trying to fool? He said, there was no difference of opinion given here. And he said, in fact, in my time in the community, I haven't really seen a difference of opinion encouraged. Okay. And you can beg to differ with that. I do think that some of those comments are reflective and true of my experience here this winter, and seeing it's become a real homogeneous community and beginning to almost think alike and not taking as many risks to challenge. And I'm wondering, you know, where does that invitation come from? Where do we begin to look at where that welcome should maybe be extended? So I'm getting getting off track here. Conflict seems to be a threat to those in power. And once again, that seems to me to be kind of limiting the creative possibilities. So all of these cultural attitudes have led us to believe that suppressing, we have been taught basically to do two things. One is to suppress our feelings, the other is to avoid our feelings, okay, or avoid confrontation or conflict, okay? And I think we don't have to look very far to see the toll that our culture has paid for that. I'm thinking particular in emotional and physical, the emotional and physical prices we paid for that in ulcers, tension-related headaches, just general stress at work, sometimes I think can be vented much more productively if we're willing to talk about that and engage in positive and productive conflict. So that's kind of the situation with what we're dealing with. And some other misconceptions about conflict. And once again, I'll take some risks with what I observe as conflict in this community. Harmony is seen as normal. Okay. I remember one time someone saying to me, we need to deal with this before it becomes a conflict. We don't want to have a conflict. No, we can't have a conflict here. And even in community meeting last night, there was a comment about some disturbance in the dining hall, and there was this thought that we didn't want the youth to see that maybe it was going to shatter that illusion of harmony in this community. And I don't know enough about the specifics of that. It could very well have been inappropriate at that time. But I do think in this community sometimes there seems to be an artificial sense of happiness and harmony. And sometimes a wider spectrum of emotion is not allowed. And conflict is one thing that almost seems to be suppressed. If someone has a difference of opinion, it's like quiet them. Suppress that. And the sadness for me in all of that is that I think we tend to, once again, kind of limit our potential as a community. And to deny conflict or the existence of conflict is, we're different people and we've come to live here together, and in some ways, Holden is such an intense bubble that we're bound to be confronted more with conflict here than possibly in other environments. Rather, as we begin to develop a different approach to conflict, you realize that conflict is the norm, that we are in conflict every day of our lives, whether they are simple disagreements with people or intrapersonal conflicts within ourselves or conflicts of a larger issue. And conflicts seem to rise and fall, and there seems to be some kind of cyclical nature to that. Conflict is often seen as pathological. People are seen generally as troublemakers. Those people that are frustrated and just choose to disrupt this harmony or this peaceful environment, and that certainly isn't the case. Or another one that I hear often, and I don't really know what to do with sometimes, is that conflict is seen as a personality problem. I simply have a personality problem with this person. Well, if you've studied any psychology, or really if you haven't, you know that personalities don't conflict. Our personalities wouldn't conflict just by virtue of those personalities. Behaviors conflict. And the nice thing about behaviors is that behaviors are learned and behaviors can be changed. And I think that's one of the things that I really like coming out of all of this study is that we're not limited. We have learned a habitual way to relate to people and to react in certain situations. As you begin to take a different approach, you begin to look that we're not limited to those behaviors. That we can indeed change that behavior if it isn't working for us. And that's where some of my real interest in this comes out of, is I'm saying, wait a minute, that conflict didn't work for me. What are some other possibilities for me in that situation? And starting to develop maybe more of a repertoire of conflict styles. What I want to propose tonight, and I don't know in how successful I'll be in that, is trying to look at conflict from a positive perspective. I really enjoy conflict, and you don't have to ask too many people in the community that I do. I really And I've really been trying to challenge the community to take a stronger, to find some ritual in this community where we can continue to deal with conflict on an ongoing basis in community meetings or wherever that needs to be. I really think this community needs to take a look at how we ritualize dealing with community rather than just the reconciliation and the passing of the peace, say at our Eucharist time, which has certainly some real value for us, but at times seems like a real shallow way to if that's the only thing that's done to resolve an interpersonal conflict is certainly to extend the peace of God to someone. Conflict is demanding, and I think that's one of the things that scares us. I think that's one of the things that pushes us back from dealing. Avoidance and suppressing your feelings are two of the lowest energy and least demanding of the conflict styles. And so and oftentimes it's the easiest one that's why I would choose to do this, because it just involves less energy. Conflict involves taking risks, involves being honest, it implies trust, and it really is an intimate encounter. I think it could potentially be one of the most intimate forms of communication we have with another person. And for those of you who are in significant relationships, you know that when the relationship gets to that point where you can productively have conflict, that's when the relationship, I think, is really, really, there's really something there. And that's why I love hearing from married people about your marriage is working. What's some of the productive conflict? What are some of the let's just open it up. What's going on in people that are in significant relationships that have some form of ritualized way of dealing with conflict? Evil and Jeanette, I'm curious. How do you do it? What?
Jeanette dreams.
Jeanette dreams?
I got mad at him in a dream, and it lasted all day. That was just the last thing.
You got mad at him in the dream because something was going wrong?
Well, there was a fire in the room next door. And I was packing, getting ready to get out of there, trying to get everything out of there. And Emo just goofed around. He didn't do anything. He didn't help. And so I was mad. And that's probably actually the way I do act in real life. I mean, I do get angry.
I like that.
And spout off. And then I'm okay. But anyway, poor Emo, I've been mad at him. Well, then he let
because
us sleep.
Because of the dream?
No, he forgot to wake us up and me up in time this morning. So 19 after 7, he woke me up and I said, and the dream was just over, and I said, why did you wake me up? So that's actually a pretty good
Jeanette, I think that's going to be one of my strongest memories of you. And one of my fondest memories are those times when you challenged us with just being honest. And I remember a couple times in particular. One was a session on trees, where it was a matins, when you did your matins on the tree and how emotional you got about that tree. And there were different times in community meetings and stuff where you would, I thought really challenge us. So, but what about in relationships? What's going on? What are some I'm curious. What?
Jen and I, in later years, out of therapy, learned some games to play that we just would have to signal to each other. We would play, one was, do you mean? And you had to get three answers right in understanding what the issue was. Three answers in a row. And very difficult to do in the midst of a conflict. And then the other person had to get three right. So really, it combed away a lot of the crud and got at some of the issues. And later on, it got to the point where you could circumvent the game and just get, be able to say, let's play the game or not play the game, but cut through stuff. And that would be often a cry from one person to another.
Could you explain the game again? I didn't.
I don't know if I can remember it all anymore. Yeah. It's been.
Get three answers read pertaining to conflict?
No, to do you mean? If you say I'm tired. Do you mean that you worked too hard today? No. Do you mean you didn't get enough sleep last night? No. Do you mean you're fed up with being with me? It might be yes or whatever it is. You know, well, what does that mean if you are upset, tired, whatever, whatever the word is? And you got to get three in a row correct before the other person.
So then the third one that she said yes to would only be the first correct answer.
That's correct. And then I had to get you two more.
They have to guess it
again. Well, not in a row, but you had to get three.
Right.
And then would shift the other one.
So in other words, in that game, it puts the burden of responsibility on the person that's seeking to find out more about the conflict?
Because it goes back and forth. It goes either way. Nobody decides in advance who starts. It could be either way. But it's the request, it's the plea, that first plea,
right.
I need to play the game, that is the step. And learning, well, that's what we had to do, we had to learn that step. And that was useful to us. And as I said later on,
What about as a family? Any family, good family conflict?
We have good family conflict.
What's a way you do that?
Pardon?
Go ahead.
Alex spends 2-3 days in a row away at work. He camps out on the site and comes home. Boys and I, the kids and I, live differently when he's there and when he's home. When he's there and when he's gone. And whenever we come back together, there's just always this sorting out of roles and relationships. And I think what we had to do was learn to value the point of view the other person was coming from. And it was in the middle of an argument once, all of a sudden it dawned on me that what he was saying had as much validity to him as what I was saying. And so we try and guess what the other person, what their stand is. You know? We go, I know what you're going to say. And try and it's sort of a way of putting ourselves in each other's shoes. And it can get real funny if you're wrong too. I hadn't thought of that. That's good. But our kids see us do it too.
Good. Well, feel free to continue to throw out things as you think of them. One thing I've been thinking about lately is just some of the theological implications of looking at confrontation and conflict in particular from a positive perspective. And that is I think just a call that I feel to be honest and to be to take risks implies for me that I need to be involved in conflict with people to challenge myself, to broaden my perspective, and to try and understand other people, as you were saying. I think I'm called to do that in some ways. So as I was saying earlier, we learn conflict styles. We learn typical styles of behavior. We tend to use those styles over and over again. And that's what's on the chart up here. There's basically the authors of this book, Joyce Hocker Wilmot and William Wilmot from the University of Montana, where they actually have, I applied to a program, you can get a graduate degree in conflict resolution. And I remember telling my folks that, and my folks going, what in the world are you going to do with that? You know, that sounds crazy. But I was accepted to the program and then decided not to go. But graduate students that are coming out of that program are primarily working in marital relations and doing mediation interventions on a larger scale. So it's some pretty exciting stuff. there's basically five different styles of confrontation or of conflict styles, and the way the just the way this particular graph has been set up, it runs on a continuum on the lower end of the scale from a concern for others with a low cooperation and a high cooperation, and then on the other side is a concern for self, which at the top is a high concern for self or an assertive aggressiveness, or at the low end of that is a low assertiveness. And so I in the fall when I did something similar to this workshop, I had us take what they call the Thomas Kilman conflict inventory, and people are free to look at that if you want, and you answer a series of questions and you find, gives you some idea on where you are in this. And I don't put a lot of stock in inventory tests and things like that. I do think they help us identify in some way characteristic behaviors of ourselves, and that leads us, once we've identified it, and if we're not satisfied that, we can move towards changing that behavior. And remember that one of the things that I'm trying to advocate here is that one style is not necessarily better than any other style, that avoidance might work, might be what would be the most positive thing to do in a certain situation. What these authors in particular are talking about is the whole issue of collaboration, which is in the far right corner up there. And that is something that has basically not been developed in our understanding of conflict. Let me just read through kind of how they describe some of the different conflict styles. At a high concern for self and a low concern for others, we have competition. It means pursuing your own concerns at the expense of others. It involves a lot of power. You gain power through direct confrontation and trying to win the issue. Once again, falling back into that real win-lose fallacy, that one person will win this and one person will lose, sets up that real strong sense of keeping score and other things. It doesn't matter if I get what I want as long as the other person doesn't get what they want. That's where some of that real destructiveness can come into conflicts. I want to actively work against the other party. I want to convince them of my position. Competition is can be positive in some ways, although I've just described it in negative ways. At times it's necessary. At times competition might be necessary to pull another person or to counter another person working in another from another style. Collaboration, which is in the far right corner that I was commenting on, is something that's concerned with reaching your own goals, but at the same time involves a high concern for others. If you look on the two continuums, it involves a concern for self and a concern for others, and those two are real equal. And I think when you start talking about your game, of the empathy playing or trying to understand another person's perspective, it moves us closer to that area where we say, well, what are the other person's needs here? What is the other person trying to do in this particular conflict? How can both of us be satisfied with the outcome of this? And so it involves, I think, a lot of creativity and looking at new possibilities. It's not to be confused with simply compromising, but it really is trying to move beyond saying I'm just going to give something up and trying to maximize the potential of the conflict. In the center is compromise, which basically states that not everyone can get their way, so I better just be satisfied with part of the pie. And I think in some ways we kind of set ourselves up for maybe giving in. Making concessions too early in the conflict, and not really moving into that collaboration where we can begin to look at some possibilities where both parties can be maybe more satisfied with the outcome. Everyone needs to give a little in the conflict. Exchange equal concessions. You give this, I'll give this, and we can go back and forth. In some ways, giving in can become too easy, and once again, we fail to look at, like I was saying, some different possibilities. On the low end of the continuum, and if I remember in the fall, it seemed like most of the people fell on this graph below compromise, and there's avoidance, which is in the far corner. And I think this is culturally, I think this is what we've been conditioned to do, is avoid conflict. And the thing that I think is interesting, if you look on this concern for others and concern for self, if you look at avoidance, it's a low concern for self and a low concern for others. And I think it challenges, I think, to look at the importance of the particular relationship that we're, that the conflict is part of, and once again, kind of challenging ourselves to maybe take risks and be honest in that. Avoidance is a passive behavior. It's not actively seeking cooperation. In some ways, it's almost a refusal to recognize conflict even existing or to engage openly in conflict. And but avoidance can also work in some situations and might be necessary in some situations. Accommodation at the other end of that is a high concern for others and a low concern for self. It involves satisfying the concerns of others and yielding to another's point of view. And this is something that I felt real strong in my upbringing, was this real sense of giving and accommodating, that we were to accommodate to other people. And so I think one of the important things that can come out of this, once again, is just learning that we're not trapped into a certain type of behavior, that we can learn to use different types of behavior at certain times in certain contexts. Okay. Anyone from the fall in particular want to share their conflict style, or just anyone thinking about this graph in particular want to talk about characteristic ways in which you respond to conflict?
You draw a line.
Not, well, just...
I mean within yourself. Where you compromise to a point, but there's like a certain line where you got to also take care of yourself. And I don't know. It's like you'll bend, but you don't want to break. Mm-hmm. And so there's always like a line, at least in me, there's a line that I try not to cross over. But when you bend so far, and it's not helping either. That you go the other way and have a conflict, a disagreement.
Is a compromise style the most common style in your?
Yeah, but you draw a line of how, I mean, of what you will compromise and what you know, you just won't take anymore.
Other styles, other comments.
I guess in my family, I was brought up with a lot of the accommodation style, where when you would cater to the needs of everyone else and put yourself last all the time. And the thing about that, how that works, is a lot of times the conflict would just escalate because you would get madder and madder. The more you bent for somebody else, then all of a sudden you just blow up. And it's not a very preventive style.
I kind of like calling that crisis conflict, where you just let things build up and then conflict happens and then you go back to that mm-hmm. harmony and then it builds up again and it...
I wonder if you don't go back to that harmony.
What's that?
I wonder if you don't go back to that harmony.
If you don't go back.
If you don't go back, how do you solve that? What are you looking for? I mean, you know, you said you go back to that harmony after you blow up, and after you blow up, there's still the uncomfortableness with that person or people or situation. How do you deal with that kind of thing? And you say personalities aren't a fact.
No, behaviors in particular, that's that comment I was referring to.
Well, you said it's not personalities, it's behavior.
Right.
I feel there's things that we do voluntarily and involuntarily that we just react to. And that, I feel, is our personalities, things that we react to involuntarily, that we just don't really think about it. We just kind of react to the, you know, to the situation type thing. What, you know, and that being your personality and doesn't get along with the way you react. And you can't help it, because I mean, it's like an involuntary reaction. You know, you just react that way, whether, you know, like work or jokes or whatever, or, you know, or playing, you know, you take the initiative type thing, and whatever, that doesn't work with somebody. I don't know, I just...
But I think what we're looking at here is sort of how to use, not how to use your personality. Well, yeah, I mean, how to engage in other, with other people, learning some new styles. I mean, if I kind of had a combination of, I think I hit a lot of the I mean, there's, all the styles are appropriate in different situations, because there's some things that, well, they just each are very helpful in different situations. And so it's a matter of using your personality to learn some other styles in different circumstances. Maybe I always move too much between accommodation and competition, the one extreme or another, and need either setting up competitive or accommodating situations or avoidance. I think, I don't know, can't remember. Anyway, I need to work more on avoidance or no, compromise or collaboration, those kinds of ones. And so I think that's what Dan is talking about, basically, is that it, how you deal with conflict isn't necessarily ingrained in your genetic or personality makeup, but you can work on developing different styles, and that each might be appropriate in different situations.
But I'm saying, aren't there things that you do, you just do it, you don't think about it.
Sure, I mean, but what we're talking about is learning behavior, new behaviors.
But if it's involuntary behavior,
that doesn't relieve you of responsibility,
the
though.
Involuntary. Thank you.
You're working on an occupational vocabulary. Thank you, too. And you're saying behavior is something you just cannot possibly change.
Well, behaviors you can change.
No, I'm saying you can
change
behaviors.
Personalities.
Oh, yeah, that's
you're
my whole premise.
You can't change.
Right.
Excuse me. But something, like it's, you say, you do something and you don't think about it. He's saying you can change it if you think about it.
I've found from my experience that, and I know some people have written about it, the birth order, of your birth in a family has a big effect on how you relate to everybody, depending on their age and the relationship that you kind of accept or build and however it happens. In a sense, it's of course you can't change your birth order. That's out of our hands. But it's one of those things, if you begin to understand it, then you kind of get a handle on it. So you can and you can't. It took me a long time even to realize how important that was. But I think it is. It just in fact, I can give a real brief example. My brother is a minister, and he was at one of these conventions, a Synod convention. And they took a quick survey, and they asked all the people to raise their hand if they were the firstborn. And he said like 90% of the pastors at this convention raised their hand. Firstborn.
I think the whole point of this is that we can, is that, like I say, we can learn new styles, we can learn new behaviors, and I think that's what's so exciting about all this, is kind of expanding and broadening our whole perspective on how we relate to other people. The authors in this particular book give some suggestions on how to do better conflict, and they really talk about conflict in a way of doing it rather than managing conflict or reducing conflict or resolving conflict. They want to do conflict, okay? And so So they talk about, I think they give about 20, I think I wrote down about 12 or 14 here. And the first one is, the first one that they mention at least is try to make many choices available to yourself and to other people, which I think in some ways really challenges us. You know, and one of the things about this whole issue about conflict that really that really kind of intrigues me and draws me further into it is that it's easy to talk about things like this, but when you start adding people, they get a little sticky, okay? And it's hard to do this, and it's hard to step out of and be objective. It is that I took a 3-credit college course in conflict and had an ongoing conflict the entire semester with this professor that we were never able to work through, okay? And we were studying it at the time, you know? So the first one they mentioned here is making other choices available to ourselves. And this is, I wrote down Kent as a good example here. Kent is someone that I think in this community in particular, and I know in particular in operations meeting and in personal interactions that we've had, you're always attempting to say, what's another perspective here? We got to look at this from different angles. We've got to consider other choices, other options here. And I really appreciate in that in you and your leadership style here in the community. And it's I think in a way kind of respecting other points of view and not immediately locking ourselves into a point of view, but continuing to consider alternatives. And in the context of community, how important. We have a wealth of resources right here in this community, and to almost single-mindedly pursue something, I think, kind of disregards the creative potential from all of it, from the input of all the people. The second one maybe goes without saying, but treat people as people and not as things. And part of that is avoid generalizations, avoid putting people in categories. All men are that way. I'm a middle child, that explains it. Just go ahead, Jack.
All guests.
Yeah, all guests. Here we go. 3 weekers. Yeah. It seems like it's easy in the context of a conflict to want to try and define that person by labeling them or giving them some category. Another one they mentioned here is taking responsibility for accuracy in communication. And they talked about speaking in specifics, once again, kind of avoiding generalizations. If you're involved in a conflict of some kind, try and be as specific about the behavior as possible. And another one that they mentioned was time, being, you know, a sense of timing. I know in particular when I'm involved in some communication and I might have been offended or something happened in an interaction with someone that set me off, I tend to want to spend a little bit of time kind of identifying my own feelings, but I feel a real need to respond to that as soon as possible. And that's something else that I kind of, as you were mentioning, Paul, I think I was taught in my family is this, what they label in the book as stockpiling. You know, it's like, I'm just going to file that away under grievances with this person, and you kind of continue to pile things up. And then when that conflict blows up, you open the box and you say, wait a minute, you know, and you pull out all this other baggage that might be from you know, might not be very relevant to the particular conflict or very accurate at that time. clarify your goals for the relationship and for the specific situation. And one of the things that they continue to talk about the importance of conflict implies a certain sense of intimacy in a relationship, and that is, if I'm willing to disagree with you, then that relationship must involve some importance for me. And continuing to talk about the interconnectedness and maybe the importance of that relationship. Mm-hmm. Establish goals that are doable. They mention if you're getting ready, you know, if you're about to be involved in a conflict, make yourself specific suggestions of things that you can do and make sure that they are doable. Today I need to talk to this person and this is how I want to do that. Rather than I just generally want to be more cordial to this person or something like that. Include emotional information as well as objective information. Sometimes in conflicts, emotions can be seen as something less relevant than maybe something intellectual. That because I'm emotional in this situation, because Jeanette's upset about the tree, that all of a sudden removed her from being objective about why the tree was cut down. Maybe I'm telling a story that people don't know anything about, but I love it. And emotions need to be expressed, and they need to be seen as a complement to other sides of the conflict. That you cannot completely intellectualize a conflict because it just doesn't work. And you know, I think we pretty much all know that. Try to avoid polarizing issues. And when I read that one, I was reminded of a special community meeting we had back in December when Chris Borges reminded us of that, that he thought at that time in that particular meeting that we were polarizing the issue into this or that, forgetting once again and eliminating a whole range of possibilities. It says avoid polarizing. If you don't agree with someone over one issue, don't let that persuade you in understanding or reaching agreement in other issues. And I think that's a real challenge. But maybe I'll use Kent again. I really disagree with Kent on the use of computers in the village, but I really respect Kent and I'm open to knowing Kent in a lot of other ways. Well, even in that way, I guess. I need to... Avoid reaching agreement too fast, kind of circumventing the whole process of doing the conflict, of going through the struggle. Immediate reconciliation. Premature voting on issues. It's unrealistic. It's too easy. It's once again saying... that we're uncomfortable with this, we got to solve it right now, rather than being willing to really muddle in the controversy, really, really go through the struggle, and that's where the real resolve is going to come out of that. Start with points of agreement. Sometimes, in a conflict situation, we can almost block out all of those other areas of our lives where we agree with that person or feel connected to that person, and focus primarily on the conflict. And I'm reminded of that in particular with a sister of mine that was living with a man at the time. And my parents, just, they had a hard time with that situation for several years. And I kept reminding them that my sister really was basically, a good person, and that they were blocking out a lot of really positive things in her life and in their relationship with her, and really clouding and kind of extending that issue into really other parts of the relationship that I didn't think they needed to do that. Avoid stating terms, I've said this a number of times, avoid stating terms in win-lose. It's that looking at it instead of from a win-win perspective, and I think as we come out of a competitive culture in some ways, we really, you know, I think of sporting events, one team leaves the winner, another the loser, and how much importance we put on that whole event of winning rather than in playing. But in realizing, I look at conflict from the perspective that if I've learned something about my behavior, regardless of whether the outcome turned out how I wanted it, I'm a winner. I've learned something about myself that once again can maybe help me understand how I react. So that's just one way that I look at that. Be empathetic towards the other person, trying to understand their perspective. And when you do understand them, say that. Tell them, I really understand your perspective about wanting a desktop printer, Ken. But I still disagree. You know, so you can be affirming in that. Don't feel limited in a conflict. You can. Always, that intervention is something that's always a possibility. and actively seeking outside help. So I feel like I've been doing a lot of talking, and I really wanted this to be a forum, and I really don't know. I have some role plays, and I'd really like some people that would be willing to play those out. And then what I'd like to do is, as a group, I'd like us, one, to try and identify the style that's being used, and I'd like for us to possibly make some suggestions about how the conflict could have been done a little more productively. Two people? Joanne and Brian, since you're so close, you want to do a conflict?
Sure.
We as a comedy, and, you know, challenge me if you want.
No, listen, hey, that's fine.
You can avoid it,
I think I've missed the, all the pronouns here.
What do you think about me having knitting machines in the
toilet? Do you have questions? Feel free to go beyond that description also.
I know it.
Does she understand? Well, I've been in that situation about an ongoing situation with somebody where we may have a disagreement and the person continues to feel that they need to explain themselves to me. And it's like, I understand the perspective, but I happen to just still disagree. And the other person continually feels like they just need to explain more to me, and then I will understand. It's like the goal is to get me to agree. And
but if you only understood, then you would agree.
If you just let me keep talking at you, you'll understand my point of view, and then that's agreeing. And the point is, I understand my view, I just don't agree.
Let's go ahead and have a role play here. I guess what I'd like for you to do is just using some of this information, maybe from tonight, but also some of your own senses, and just try and identify the different conflict styles in particular, and then maybe we can talk about some of the specific tactics that are being used, and maybe some more productive approaches to this role play. Anytime.
Joanne, I was just talking to Eric this morning, and he approached me. He said that you had brought up something about the problems that I was having with David. And I guess when I talked to you about David, that was something that we agreed we wouldn't take outside of our, you know, just our talking about it. So I was pretty upset about that. I guess I just felt like that was really inappropriate behavior for you to do that. And it wouldn't have bothered me so much if you know, I hadn't remembered that it had come up in a couple other situations when you said that you wouldn't share something and then went ahead and did it. I don't know. I
think you might be making it a little bigger than what it really has to be. It sounds like you're upset and we should probably talk about it. Right now I feel like I don't really want to deal with it but I hear what you're saying.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure you don't want to deal with it. You deal with that.
No, it's something I do want to talk to you about. I just, at this point, it's real difficult for me. And maybe we could set up a time.
Well, I mean, this is good a time, then.
Well, like I said, it's a real difficult thing for me right now. I'm not sure. You might be making it bigger than what it has to be.
Well, see, I don't think I am, Joanne, because I think it's not just this. There's a lot of other things that are tied into it. you know, it's not just something of breaking confidence, but also this whole idea of that there's something that's kind of between us, and then you're betraying that. You know, I guess in a lot of ways I feel betrayed by you, not just by this, but by what that Afghan that I really liked, and you said that I could have it, and then you gave it to Barb, and I didn't appreciate that at all.
You want to, like, we could get together tomorrow, maybe, you know, I don't know, after lunch or something, right?
Well,
now.
No, I think I'm really busy tomorrow. I mean, what are you doing right now? Do you have something coming up?
Yeah, I really do.
This is another problem. Whenever I want to talk with you, you go running off. You got things going on. I don't know what they are. Maybe you're off spreading my stories all around town or something.
Well, I think you're blowing it out of proportion, really.
I don't think so.
But I'm hearing that you're upset, and it is something we should deal with.
Well, I'm glad you're hearing that, yeah.
You know, maybe we could get together with Dave and work things out and see if we can figure out what was said.
I don't know. I just think there's a lot more than David at stake here and that whole thing. I think it's the whole question of trust between us and when you say one thing and then you go and do another. You know, when you borrow my car, I just ask you, you know, please check the oil and do stuff like that. And you just don't do that.
Let's go ahead and cut. Thanks for doing that. Let's start with Joanne's side. What are some tactics that Joanne was trying to do in this conflict here? One was obviously attempting to postpone it. Which is an avoidance tactic in that kind of recognizing maybe that there's a conflict there, but let's work on it later. What's something else that Joanne was doing?
Downplaying.
Right. Minimizing the conflict. Like, it isn't that big a deal. I don't see what the problem is here. Two tactics that Joanne did well. What was Brian up to? A little baggage started showing up there. Yeah, he started, and the Afghan. I love that line. That was, I was like, no,
searching for something.
You found it.
They have another fight going here.
That is something I think that maybe all of us could relate to, is telling somebody something. And that get a little bit further than you expected it to get. But I'd usually hesitate saying anything again to that person. So two or three times, and Brian was saying, you know, I confided in Joanne.
Well, I trust you.
One time I heard once and kind of went away.
What are some ways in which maybe this conflict could have been done better? What are some things that you thought were real productive about it?
But it was hard to know whether Joanne was legitimately trying to avoid it or whether she really, I mean.
There's real mixed messages there.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've had a similar situation. I was right in the middle of moving and my son decided, you know, he wanted just to resolve some conflicts. And I, you know, it just was impossible for me. I mean, I was exhausted and, you know, I had to be out of my house. And he's saying, well, you know, I do 18 years worth of conflict. And, you know, I mean, it just wasn't appropriate. And you know, it wasn't that I was trying to avoid it, it's just that really was legitimate and not appropriate time. And I just sort of wondered if that was a legitimate thing that she was doing or she was really trying to avoid it.
That wasn't really appropriate. And it's hard with both things. As far as not concerned, the person really is about the other person. I mean, did she tell Mark out of genuine concern for Brian? Or did she tell Mark because, hey, you know, this is overgeneral conversation? And so it's hard to realize the depth of the relationship. Yeah.
I think something that Kate picked up on, though, I sensed, I was a little suspicious of Joanne. It's like, is that the real reason for this? it's, on one hand, she was recognizing that they needed to talk about it in a real genuine way. She was saying, I understand, I know we need to talk about this, and then there was this, but this isn't a good time for me.
I guess maybe she said, you know, as a name with the time, that might have made it a more legitimate
request. Didn't she say tomorrow?
Yeah.
Or
something.
Which brings up that just that whole issue of doing conflict, and the environment is a whole factor that's involved, and where is it comfortable? It looks like you two had found a comfortable place, that you had found Joanne in a place, environment where she was comfortable, and the timing is also something that's important. So let's try another one. Esther and Paul. Should we just go right around the circle here?
No. I'm not very good at this.
Is that wind?
Wind or rain? Or?
Well, they probably could use it sometimes.
There's wind.
If you need any clarification. Oh, well, that's that could be a problem.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm your wife.
Yeah, I like that.
What time is it going to be?
9:30. Conflict.
One of those digital ones, yeah, with the buttons and beeping.
The best for winters.
I sometimes think Gary intentionally sets his alarm to go off during your breakfast. Okay, so we'll go ahead. Let's do one more and then we'll close up the session.
Yeah, so I was just balancing the checkbooks, and I discovered there were two missing checks, and I was wondering if you knew anything about that, and where they went or anything.
No, why would anyone know about two missing checks? I didn't write them.
Well, I think you did.
Who were they to?
Well, I don't know, but... They're missing. You're sure you haven't taken them?
I wouldn't take any checks. Why would I take any checks from you?
Well, it's a joint account of ours, but there are two checks that just aren't accounted for, and I didn't write them.
I don't remember writing any checks.
Well...
When do you think they were written?
I don't know, but...
If we can't
account for them, I'll probably just have to take all the checks and put them in my name.
You didn't get
put,
that
put the money in my account.
You got it. Sorry.
Well, what's the bank signature say? Bank signature shows something on the check.
But they haven't come in yet.
Well, then how many are they missing?
Why, Brian? They're not in the checkbook. I enter in every time I write a check, I enter it in.
Well, I
try and
write them in every time I write a check, too. Maybe we both need bank accounts, separate accounts.
Yeah, I think I'll just take all the my income and just put it in my account. Yeah. Only my name on it. So I'll be able to keep track of it.
So what do I get from that?
And, well, that's just it.
that's the problem.
You may just not get it. You may have to just come to me to get it so I can write a check. Mm-hmm. And also, all the time this money goes out for your relatives that you invite over all the time. And they come in, you invite them over to dinner without asking me or just helping me out at all.
What about the ones you bring over for dinner?
I
and don't let me know that they're coming.
I always let you know whenever there's somebody coming. And I rarely invite people over.
Well,
your relatives, they were all the time. It seems like 3-4 times a week. Somebody is stopping in. They don't even call ahead. At least you don't tell me they're coming. Do you know they're coming?
No. I don't invite them.
Let's go ahead and talk. Let's talk about it a little bit. What's going on here? I can't remember what I wrote down.
I think we got off the track.
Yeah, we did get off the
track. No, I mean, in an argument of starting out at one point and then like baggage, both had baggage and the original issue was long gone.
Yeah, you never defined what the content was, what the issue was. And sort of moved away from
that. I've been in situations like that.
You bring up everything except.
Or just not this.
You sort of go around everything.
The other thing was you kind of contradicted each other all the time. I mean, he would say, well, you do this, and you would say, no, I don't. Mm-hmm. And you never kind of resolved those little miniature pieces of the conflict. You know, does this happen or doesn't it? Are the checks missing or aren't they? It was like you never settled on the facts, so you didn't know if you were disagreeing or not.
What are some of the things I wrote down there? I was wondering, what else is part of the scenario? What the possibility of closing out the checking account or having dual checking accounts or something? What was the other? You have a hard time reading my writing also?
I discovered there were some checks missing, and I confronted my husband and threatened to take all the checks and one and put it into a separate account. Split the bills.
Okay. And the other one was being defensive and denying that, or?
You all of a sudden realized that the issue had made her very upset. And so you decided to agree with her, well, if you didn't do it, what she wants, apologize. But we got off on another attack.
Yeah.
And brought in extra baggage.
Well, let's go ahead. Thanks for role-playing, folks. I guess any feedback on anything is welcome, either now or at other times. It's something that intrigues me because it's just a real challenge for me to learn more about how I interact through confrontation and conflict with people, and it's something that just when I seem to think that I've learned something, I realize that I still have a lot more to learn about relating to other people. So.
I had a friend that had that similar conflict with her husband, and she ended up getting into the conflict.
Really?
She really enjoyed it. Worked out really well.
And in a case like this, where it could have been worked out, was they could have waited another. They might have just stayed arguing for another month, but they would have waited a month to see if the check came in.
But I know that I know of cases where, because of the kind of work I do, this happens all the time, and they're never resolving. They just fight constantly.
Well, a question I have is anybody's suggestion, because I am a fairly laid-back person, and a lot of things don't bother me. And so, in the sense of, I guess supposedly I could trivialize a lot of conflict because I don't really see it as a conflict. I don't see that big deal out of it. And that has, in a past relationship, a lot of times I would end up accommodating and avoiding because it just wasn't that big a deal to me over whether the cap was on the toothpaste or not. I think.
That really upsets the other person.
Yes. Or whether the trash can's on the left side of the desk or the right side of the desk. I don't care. And yet, it will be a big deal to the other person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe some of that.
Okay. I mean, I guess, you know,
but it's something else usually.
I think a couple things come up in that particular example, and that is how much we assume about the relationships that we're in, kind of this assumed understanding that other people would naturally think like I do. And so we don't necessarily sit down and actually confront or talk about certain issues because it doesn't even seem like it should be one. And what was the second thing I was going to say? Another thing is a sense of flexibility. I think is really important in life in general. And I think that really carries over, a life view that kind of carries over into a conflict style, is just maintaining a sense of flexibility with people and with situations.
Someone pointed out to me too that a situation where something meant something to someone else and it didn't mean something to you, that sometimes some compromise can reach, and what matters is the perspective and the right and the left, and really doesn't matter to you, and you know, I feel like it's like a question that really matters to you. I mean, sometimes, I know when I was managing a farm building, and you poured on some issues that the other person didn't really agree with, and it had to come down to, he had, you know, it was important to me to get support. And so he ended up compromising by
supporting it.
Well, what's probably important in that situation is really utter, you don't really care.
See you later.
For the other person to be communicating to you. You know, if it doesn't really matter to you where the wastebasket is, then you kind of need them to communicate that it matters to them. Otherwise, it's going to be just wherever you happen to put it. So like in Paul, in your situation, you really don't care. And if there's a conflict building up, it maybe it's because the other person hasn't communicated, well, I want the cap on the toothpaste. Because if you don't care and they say that, then it would be sort of assume that your concern for them would lead you to put the cap on. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So what's a part of it that's important is their communication about each person in relationship communicating about the things that are important to them that aren't happening.
Yeah, thinking. No.
Go ahead.
I can always tell when you're thinking, Emo.
No, I'm not talking about the home. But I'm talking about sometimes maybe the need we have. I'm talking about, you know, where we came from as we were growing up, you know, wherever we were born, you know, what order and home. But there are things that maybe sometimes crop up where we feel that we have to sort of get on top of something in this whole conflict business. I mean, like, maybe we held back for years. I tended to be pretty conciliatory to my parents. After I passed the age 14, after that I was sort of, you know, the whole time there where I just, you know, what they did was okay, it was fine. My two brothers, on the other hand, were always criticizing my parents. I mean, at a certain period. I think I may have had some rebellion later on that, you know, I didn't necessarily directly take out on my parents. I try to resolve it some other way or some channel. But maybe it happened when I was in the Navy. I mean, I rebelled against some authority there. I had some conflicts with the whole U.S. Naval Base in New Orleans one time.
I've heard this story.
About the turkey.
Yes, the church.
The turkey
and
story?
Yeah. And with church, sometimes, you know. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I tried to be accommodating. I mean, like, I sort of staved off conflict with a church organist for about 8 years, I think, one time, or about 6 years. And it finally happened.
Oh, I thought she was still playing.
No, she was, I didn't say she couldn't.
Oh. You left the church, didn't you?
No.
Oh.
I left it later, but I mean, she it got to the point where she was placing demands upon the church council that I be, you know, either she or I go, you know, or something like that. And so the way the conflict at that time was resolved was I wrote up a statement of what would be the basis of a working relationship, and that there's no criticism about how she, you know, played or anything like that. But it must be understood that she must respect certain areas where the pastor has to make some decisions about things. And so what happened was that she ended up resigning that. The council approved that statement and wrote a letter to him. And
so you won.
I won, yeah.
You just said he didn't have an organ.
Well, we got another organist. You always get another organist.
Expendable.
But I guess, you know, I felt bad about it, but on the other hand, happened to be a person who just could not get along any place where she worked. I mean, after I left, she came back for a while as organist, but then after a while, it was the next pastor she had conflict to. And then the schoolhouse where she worked as a secretary, it seemed like the school was happy.
Sounds like she was a troublemaker.
Yeah, it was pathological. The school, yeah, I think it was that, but the school was happy when she was having a big rhubarb with the church, because then things were okay at the school, but, you know.